I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Behind Massive Screens, a game development podcast here from Massive Entertainment. I always say I'm excited, but I'm super excited today as well, because we're going to talk about a topic that I know very little about. So please welcome Patrick and Miriam. Patrick, associate producer here at Massive, and Miriam, localization project manager, because that's what we're going to talk about. Welcome.
Thank you.
How are you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Very good. Thank you for having us.
Of course. As I said, is a topic that I think for English speakers, also in Sweden, because English is like second language here in general, localization is one of those things that we don't think about very much. We know there is a German version of the game or Spanish version of the game, but we don't really think about all the work that goes into that. So the first question I will ask, big general question I ask every time, what is localization?
Well, localization is the process to adapt content from to the different local markets we work with, and doing it so well that it looks like it was originally made for that market.
Right. I like that word, adapt.
Yes.
That is, I think, one of the key words that we don't think about very much.
Yes, because normally we would think that it's just a matter of translating or dubbing.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of cultural things that need to be adapted to other markets.
Yeah. We'll get back to, again, that key word later on. But before we go into that, I'd love to know how you ended up in the games industry and at Massive. We'll start with you, Miriam.
Okay. I studied translation and intercultural communication in college.
Right.
I didn't really know what I wanted to do after my college degree, but I've always had an interest in games. And at some point in summer that year, in 2014 already, I just met up with a friend and he told me that he got a position at EA as a tester. And I said, well, this is interesting, why not? So I started out at EA as well as a tester. And then I discovered that there was something called project management and localization. And I've always had an interest in culture, languages, in people. And from there, I just continued in the industry.
Right. When did you come to Massive?
I joined Massive in December 2020.
Right.
In a very cold winter.
That's
and it's been amazing
common.
Since then.
Very dark, cold winter.
Yeah.
Patrick?
I studied international communication, which is this really vague thing, but I focused on...
Communication degrees tend to be... I have one as well. They tend to be very vague.
I focused on translation and interpreting. Mm-hmm. And I was always good at language. I was not good at art, so I couldn't be an artist. I wasn't good at math, so I couldn't be a programmer. But I loved games, and I thought that maybe translation is my way in. So back in 2004, I started working as a freelance translator. And my first game was Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. It was really cool. I was a big fan. And from there, I just I worked on more and more games. And at some point, I made the transition into project management. And when I was ready for kind of a life move, I decided to apply here and as localization project manager. And have been here since 2017. So right. 5 years now.
That's quite a while.
Yeah. It's been a while. It's been good.
So let's jump right in. A pretty big starting question, but why do you think localization is so important?
Yeah, okay. So I think in development in general, we kind of live in an English bubble. We look, you know, we're an English first studio. We look a lot at English reviews online, and we get a lot of feedback from people who play in English. But there's, of course, many, many people around the world who are not, we're not proficient enough in English to play our games in English. And so bringing the game to people who don't speak English as well allows us to have a bigger audience and to bring the game to that worldwide audience. And also, of course, it helps because if it helps with sales, because if people can't understand the game, then people won't buy the game.
Right.
So that's why localization is really important.
Yeah. Yeah, since all the scripts, everything is written in English, it's so easy for us to just forget about that. But when you start out, you have the script, you have the game. What kind of, like, how do you approach the text starting out?
It depends on what type of game we're doing as well. But for example, if it's if it's a war game, then we have to take into account many things depending on the country that we're adapting it to.
Sure.
For example, I don't know, the blood for Japanese markets, art also in some other markets. Some things are not, how can I say this? Some things are not visibly acceptable in some markets as well.
Right.
Patrick will go more into detail on that, for example, with more cultural issues, if you want to share some with us. But for example, once we start the text translation, we send it to our studios, to our translation studios. Then we have our tools where we import the text. And yeah, translation is pretty straightforward, depending also on what we're doing, if there are any other things happening in there that we need to adapt. But yeah, I don't know if you want to add anything else, Patrick, on the text part.
Yeah, there's a lot that comes also before we even send things out for translation, right? And that's the cool thing about working in localization in Ubisoft for the most part, and here at Massive, is that you're embedded in the development team. And so you can be around the development team and be in all the feature meetings, for example, from the very beginning. So you really get an intimate knowledge of the game, and you can transfer that knowledge to the partners later on before you start translation. And we do all kinds of things that I think we can get into about to help the vendors understand what the game is.
Right.
Because of course they're not here, they're external. So they don't have as intimate of knowledge of the game as we do. So that all comes before translation. So that's what we look at. We look at potential cultural issues and age rating issues and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking about, I mentioned script and all of that, but there's so much more in a game. You have UI, you have technical terms, you have option menus, you have everything that needs to be looked at. Like, how do you approach those? And how do you take that in and work with that part? Because script translation, and I'm not sure if I sound rude from time to time, but that sounds like similar to translating books or videos. Kinda. Patrick is moving his head for
yeah.
It's there's a lot of things to keep in mind. If you're translating into a language that we intend to dub into, then there's things to take into account. Like, there might be time constraints on the recording because we need to follow the length of the English recording.
Oh, yeah.
So that's something that we keep in mind, and that's why it's also adaptation. So it's translation first and then also adapting to make sure that it fits, for example. So that's something that we need to take into account. And there might be exotic names in the script, for example, that you need to think about. They might sound they might not sound as good in that localized language as they do in English for various reasons. So there's a lot of preparation that comes before the actual translation.
Yeah,
and what you mentioned about UI, for example, there are a lot of things that need to be taken into account. For example, languages in which sentences are longer than English, for example, German, we need to make sure that the boxes that we use in UI can be adaptable. Also, the spacing between lines, for example, on Asian languages, they need to be a little bit bigger as well. Yeah, many things. The right-to-left orientation for Arabic, that's... A lot of things that need to be prepared. Yeah.
Yeah, we actually talked to Izzy from Ubisoft Connect about those things, just how it is to work with those things in a... Now, it's not inside a game, but still it's a UI work, right? So that's really interesting. How do you do that? Like, not technically, perhaps, but how do you make sure that actually works?
Well, mainly... communicating a lot with the other studios at Ubisoft. We have a very fluent communication with them, constant communication to see if everything is correct, if there's any other need that needs to happen in the builds, and mainly that they are the ones that guide us and let us know if there's anything that needs to be modified or fixed.
Right. So what kind of, when approaching this, we're still not actually questions about working with the text as such itself, but what kind of philosophy do you approach these things with?
Well, of course, what Miriam said at the start is very important, right? We want to, the secret to great localization is to make it seem as if the game was made in the language that the player is playing in. So, That's the main philosophy, I guess, behind localization. And I think just to go back also to what Miriam was saying about like UI text boxes and stuff like that. I think a lot of companies work with external localization departments. And so I will again bang the drum of having an embedded team because, it makes it really easy to go over to the UI team and say, you know, hey, we need to come up with something to make our text fit. Mm-hmm. So we, for example, established very early on in the project a set of guidelines and adapted to the project, and basically say, you know, we need up to 100% extra space for German for very short strings, and you need to take into account vertical length as well, and lots of other stuff. So that really helps us to make sure that the game is localizable.
Right.
From an early point in development.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to the adapt question because now we're adapting UIs. But when it comes to adapting, as you said, cultural differences, languages, some reason I'm 12 years old. I'm thinking about curse words, stuff like that. How do you work with those cultural differences? The blood thing is interesting as well, like changes to that part of the game. But how do you work with the cultural differences between countries?
Mainly, we also have a very close communication with age rating. They are the ones that give us the guidelines for anything that could be problematic between the different countries. And we go from there. I don't know all of them by heart, but there are some, as you mentioned, some words that we try to avoid in localization that might be acceptable for English, but could be problematic later on for localized languages.
Can you go the other way around as well? Not acceptable in English, perfectly fine in German?
Wait, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah. I've never had an example on that.
Right. We did Romanian subtitles for Division 2, and although I don't speak a lot of Romanian, we asked the translators to basically go bananas with the swearing because, you know, Division is a very there's a lot of swearing in there. And I know one thing about Romania is they get very creative with their swearing, and we said, you know, go crazy with the swearing, and I've been told that it's great. So I don't think they went too far. I didn't hear anything.
I know a bunch of Hungarians, and they're swearing when they translate what they just said, and they swear a lot. That kind of brings us into, we're not only talking, now we've talked about UI and how you work with the UI team. So what other teams do you work with and how? Patrick, you talked a lot about being embedded, for example, and how does that communication look?
communication with the rest of the Ubisoft teams, or
when creating the game, so many teams are involved. You obviously have tentacles. Is that word? Is that the word you use in English? You probably use it in Swedish. Sorry, but your hands in a lot of pots.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that communication look? How do you work with other teams?
A lot of meetings, a lot of email exchange, mostly meetings. But yeah, everyone in Massive, in Ubisoft in general, they are amazing. My previous experience was sort of like an external consultancy agency in translation, but being able to work within the studio, it's great. The communication is a lot faster, and everyone is willing to lend us a hand to help us out. It's difficult to be in the last part of the pipeline sometimes, because we are one of the last steps in the game development. But yeah, the rest of our colleagues are very happy to help us out and to resolve any questions or future problems that we might have.
Yeah, because I remember when I was working on the Division 2, like emails from Patrick would pop up on not the weirdest occasions, but the occasion when you weren't ready, like, oh, we didn't think about this.
I probably did that, yeah.
Yeah. No, it was great every time. Again, you learn so much just listening to your input and the expertise the two of you and your teams have.
Yeah, it's pretty broad, because we have a hand in tech as well. So in Snowdrop, for example, so we work really closely with the Snowdrop team, and we work closely with the audio team. I manage the audio team as well, and my previous manager when I was LogPM managed the audio team as well, and she worked really hard to make localization that department that is part of the tail end of production, just like other departments like audio, like animation, like VFX. And I consider Miriam, for example, to be part of the extended audio family. And she's really close to, for example, our voice designers, because, well, she has to be for her job. But it's also, yeah, the jobs are related. She does a lot of similar things as a LogPM to the voice designers. So it's it's audio, it's UI, it's Snowdrop, it's business, it's at Ubisoft HQ.
Brand as well.
Brand
sometimes.
Team, yes. Yeah. So we're probably forgetting a bunch. So it's it's good to build strong relationships as the LogPM.
Yeah. Now you bring up something, because basically most of what we've talked about so far has been text, UI, script, but you mentioned voices now.
Yeah.
So how do you work with audio voices and voices?
Well, that is also another world.
I can imagine.
Depending on what countries. The sound itself is different. And for example, here, the sound, I think it's cleaner, but in some Asian countries, there is more of a radio sound to things in recordings. And that to me is it's quite shocking that even sound is different from one country to another. And thank you to the audio team and the voice design teams here for instructing me and showing me that these are differences that exist. I didn't know this before either. So yeah, it's amazing. Voices as well, how a voice sounds in one country and another. For example, one voice here that could be very normal, a very standard voice for dubbing can sound cartoony or even animated wise in other countries. It's amazing.
Yeah, I can. It sounds quite complicated.
Yes. That's why we also work a lot with the Ubisoft local teams for casting validation, so that we ensure that we're getting the best voices that are in the market for our games.
So how do you have, actually I have a little notes here that you helped me write, but you how do you address dialects in that case?
Yeah, Do you want to take that one, Patrick?
Yeah, I guess we're going to come back to the way other languages sound and stuff like that. But how do you work with dialects, knowing what fits, what doesn't, et cetera?
Yeah, of course, we rely a lot on the local teams, the experts, right? So you might have in a game an example of someone who speaks, maybe has like a hillbilly accent or something like that. So you got to find the local equivalent to that. And there are examples where we've gotten it spot on. And there's examples where we have gotten it very wrong. But you rely on the local teams, the experts, the casting teams, and the subsidiaries as well, who are really helpful with that. Yeah. So it's important to again, because they get basically one opportunity to see the game in action before they start working on it and before the game releases. So it's really important to give them all the context, right? All the character bios and what's the relationship between this character and that character, and what are they, you know, what are their motivations? Like, we share all of that stuff so they have as clear of a picture as possible.
Yeah.
And it also depends on the countries, because some countries will directly say, we don't do dialects. In Spain, for instance, I'm from Spain, we don't do dialects because it has always gone wrong. Every time that we've done it, we have always done the wrong choice. And for example, putting Southern Spain accent to something, it's not good.
Well, I mean, coming from, I know what you're talking about. You know what I'm going to say now, probably. Coming from this part of Sweden, where our voices like northern parts of Sweden don't understand what the hell we're saying.
That's why I feel you. I'm basically from the Skåne of Holland.
So right.
When they try to portray kind of stupid characters comedy, they'll have my accent.
Yep. I know that feeling all too well. That's why every actor in Sweden sounds like they come from Stockholm. Even if it's set like in small towns in our part of the country, everybody sounds like they come from Stockholm for good reason. So early on as well, going back to stuff that's been said before, you mentioned Snowdrop. You mentioned briefly the technology behind Snowdrop, being, of course, the game engine that we use here at the Massive, our very own little baby now. What kind of technology do you use?
For translations, we have a translation tool that only translators use called MemoQ. Then we also rely a lot on Oasis, which is where we store all the text, all the translation, all the audio, and that is mainly our main tool in localization.
What kind of tool is it? You store, is it what kind of software is it?
It's just an asset management tool.
Right.
It's used by the narrative team, by the voice design team, and the narrative team, they write the lines in English, then the audio team records those lines done in English, and then I pick those lines and send into translation, then recording. And I guess there are more things involved in there that I'm not aware about because we're so many teams in using it. But yeah, that is our main tool.
Yeah.
And yeah, depending on what we're doing, we also have to tweak those. It's every project is different. Has a different structure. We use different tools as well. I don't know if you want to add anything else, Patrick.
Well, yeah, I mean, we use Oasis a lot. That's kind of where, you know, Miriam lives in the day-to-day. But that's connected to Snowdrop. And yeah, more and more we're moving things over to Snowdrop. So for example, UI text lines are written in Snowdrop, and the designers own their own text. And when they submit their text in Snowdrop, it gets sent to Oasis. And there's some steps that we do to approve the text before it gets sent to Oasis. But nowadays also we write, or the writers write the scripts in Snowdrop as well, and they get sent to Oasis. So Oasis is more and more becoming just an asset management tool, more than a tool where we write.
Right.
Although we're still doing that for some parts of the game. And so that tech of, you know, how things get sent to Oasis and how, you know, what do we require when you submit text, that's all handled by the Snowdrop team. And the people who originally wrote the pipeline, the localization pipeline for Snowdrop is still here, mm-hmm. Or at least some of the people. And it was my previous manager, who was also a localization PM, had a big hand in that as well. So shout out to Virginia.
Because it sounds like you're using a lot of tech in general.
Yes, we use a lot of tech daily. Yeah.
I'm just trying to, little things I know about, like translating books and stuff, just sounds like there is such an, and that keeps coming back. And in even when we talk about, like, not fuzzier subjects, but we keep coming back to the tech. It's always tech involved when you're working in the games industry. It's not never very straightforward, just punch in words Word, unless you work as a communicator. So there's always that aspect involved.
Sometimes people work in Word, and then we say, please don't.
Work in Oasis.
Yeah, exactly.
So if for people that to become a localization project manager, we've been referring to it as LocPM during the course of this episode, just to make clear what it is. What kind of qualities do you need to be able to do this job? Again, there's just a lot of people involved.
Yeah, exactly. Since there's a lot of people involved, I think that communication skills is the top highest quality. Being able to also be empathetic, understanding, because as well, we work with a lot of people and not everybody has the same priorities
Right. Or
the same deadlines. And that has to be also understood. And patience, time management, but especially as well, wanting to learn, being an avid learner. You never stop learning in localization. It's amazing everything that's involved, all the teams that you have a dependency on, and it's amazing to be able to be embedded in the studio, to be able to learn and see what other teams are doing that will also affect your job.
Yeah, because there must be, we talked about the size of the teams, but so many different languages, so many different translators. It must be a constant communication.
Yes, it is a constant communication. There's a lot of translators translating at the same time in the tool that we use.
Yeah.
It's funny when you see how they sliced a document to be able to send it out to the different translators, and you see so many in there.
go read the credits for most of Ubisoft's games, and it's going to be it's a long credit list.
Yes.
Just reaching localization teams.
Oh, localization is definitely at fault for the infamous long Ubisoft credits. I actually have some really cool stats that I can share from Division 2.
Oh, please do.
Like, for example, the number of actors that we used in total for localization was 1,217.
What?
That's the total number of actors. And then, in total involved in localization, so that's everyone, including the actors, is over 1,500. So that's all those names in the credits.
Whoa.
That's part of the reason why they're so long. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
That you definitely don't think about.
No, and it all of those people working on localization, it all funnels through mostly one or two people in the studio. And right now that is Miriam. So she has a lot on her plate, and that's in addition to managing all the internal the internal stakeholders. So she's a busy person.
I am a busy person, yes.
Good thing you have patience, the communication
exactly.
skills, everything.
Understanding and yes.
One thing we haven't talked about though, which I'm going to jump back a little bit, I think, is working with accessibility as well. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because accessibility in general has become, of course, a giant thing in the industry, luckily. Especially here at Ubisoft, we work a lot with different accessibility options, for example. How does localization work with that subject?
You want to go ahead?
Yeah, I think a feature like subtitles, which is another thing that people generally don't think about there. They're kind of just there. That's, for some part at least, kind of naturally lands on the plate of localization. I mean, it's really it touches on many different disciplines, UI, audio, localization, but it kind of lands on our plate. And for Division 2, I actually wrote a really, really long design for subtitles and closed captions. I'm pretty sure it's a record, just the sheer length of the document. We added closed captions. We added stuff like a directional icon that shows you the direction from which the, for example, an NPC bark is coming. So if you are hard of hearing, then you can see by that icon, like, where is that guy coming from that is saying I'm flanking. So that's stuff that we included in the subtitles, and that's something that that usually localization is involved in.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Again, coming down to not only long scripts, but localization of barks, like short thing NPCs that, like you said, flanking, or they got Alex, for example. Yeah. There's a lot of different of those coming from different NPC factions in the Division, for example.
Yeah.
So it's a lot. Yeah. You do a lot of things.
It sure is.
It's sure amazing.
Is. It's so varied.
Yes.
So many different levels of and subjects you have to deal with all the time.
Yes.
And the games are huge. The games are absolutely
huge. Yeah,
they're
like AAA gaming. It's
and they're bigger and bigger each time.
Bigger and bigger. and just, if you think about the number of words that we translate and record for a game like this, it's, I think off the top of my head, it was 650,000 words per language for Division 2. And that's more than the Lord of the Rings trilogy and The Hobbit combined, right? And all of the languages together is millions of words, and then a lot of those get recorded as well. So that's why we have so many hours in the studio, so many actors, and it's the games are huge.
Again, I'm learning so much, again, coming from a position where you don't really think about it, but it's so natural. Game is in English. So I've been playing a certain game that everybody on the internet talks about, and I'm almost getting tired of saying and reading Elden Ring all the time. But it came up, and it's an amazing game, and I can't stop playing. I can't stop thinking about it, and all I want to do is go home and play. Anyway, I read a thread on Reddit about mistranslation, for example. Are you able to catch that at some points? Like, how do you deal with that when it turns out like a word or a term has been mistranslated?
Yes. As Patrick mentioned before, our translators are not able to see the game constantly, so they depend a lot on the reference that we send them on Confluence pages, on character bios. But yeah, there's sometimes that some things didn't get the context that they needed to translate. And most of the time, those get caught by our testing teams who are playing the build and making sure that everything has the quality that we want it to have.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, we will catch those.
Yeah, we have, in addition to all the people who are actively trying to break the game, just functionality testing, we have a small army of localization testers as well. So for Division 2, for example, we had 57 people full-time for 3 months.
Just adding to that list.
Yeah, it's just another thing. It's we had 57 people for 3 months full-time testing the game just for localization. And so they'll find a lot. So that's a lot of issues that get flagged to us that we can fix. And then, of course, in the advantage of being a game as a service is that you can fix things retroactively, right? You can go back and fix things even in when you're live.
Yeah.
So that we've done that a lot too.
Yeah,
players notice something, or
I think I saw during bug reports of a certain word being wrong.
Yeah.
Usually small things.
Yeah,
but it's always interesting to see.
Yeah.
So for people listening, I'm sure localization will bring in people who are interested in languages and translation, etc., and interested in the game industry, like the two of you were. Where would I start towards a career in this? Or do you have any tips? Or
I would say starting with a degree in translation and communication or similar. I think that is the base, because you do learn what it takes to be a translator at first. I didn't work as a translator per se before entering the project management area. Only a few things, some internships and things like that. But you do learn what it takes to translate, and you do learn what is needed in order to do a good translation, what you have to take into account, what dictionaries to use, what references to use. And I think that's the most important thing. And after that, if you are interested, I would say persist and enter the video game industry in whatever form it is. In my case, was testing. I love playing. It was an amazing summer for me. 3 months playing video games nonstop. So yeah, that I think that would be the perfect way to enter. Yep. It, also one of the most fun as well.
Yeah, definitely. Starting out as a tester is really good. And it's actually, I think it's probably pretty hard actually to get a job as a localization PM, that especially embedded in a studio, because the projects are huge and we have only one Miriam here, for example. So they're really rare as well. Having a passion for localization is, I don't think that many people have that passion that we do.
Yeah.
Because it's good to have the passion and the persistence. Because let's face it, for a lot of people, localization is an afterthought, right? Yeah. It happens automagically. So it's good to have that that passion for it and then be the champion of localization. Yeah. That's important as well.
So do you have any, if I'm sitting at home or in the commute, do you have any like resources online I can look at?
There are many blogs from freelance translators. I know, for example, some Spanish ones, of course, because as I mentioned, I'm Spanish. And there's a blog called Algo Más Que Traducir. And that one is written by a person that has been in the video game industry for a long time as a translator, freelance. And there are so many resources there, courses, guidelines, things to take into account when translating certain terms. So yeah, I would say blogs, also some podcasts, and books.
Yeah, definitely. And there's some great GDC talks as well on YouTube.
There's always good GDC talks.
Always,
yeah.
Keep coming back for some reason.
I think freelancing is a way that a lot of people get into the industry. So yeah, you can, and if you can't do that, you can start with fan translations and kind of build your skills. Everybody thinks that they're a great translator, but not actually that many people are. So you can start that way. And also, I think these days, especially, in the times that we live in, freelance project managers are becoming more and more common. So that's a great way to get the experience as a PM.
You have here on the list of books, one that I love the title of. This Be Book Bad Translation Video Games.
Oh, yeah. That's a favorite.
Yeah.
That's a good title.
Yeah, that's a nice little funny book. It has all the examples of how not to localize.
Oh,
yeah. That's all good, your laser belong to us and stuff like that.
That's a great translation.
Yeah.
We will have these links and probably a little bit more in the show notes. So feel free to check those out if you want to learn more.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much for coming here. I've learned a crazy amount of what you do. So thank you both very much.
Yeah, thanks for having us and let us talk about all of the things that we deal with.
Absolutely.
On a daily basis.
It's always great to have people, as you said, with a passion coming here and talk about what they do. It's always great. And thank you. I think a lot of people out there have learned, especially us English speakers, what actually goes into it. So thank you very much. Thank the 1,500 people.
Yeah.
I'll make sure to actually stay for those credits next time.
Yes.
But yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.